Tom Haberstroh joins the show to help me react to the Drew Holiday contract extension, find comps to explain Paolo Banchero to those who've never seen him, and list off players who have the most on the line heading into the NBA playoffs. All that and much more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends! Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Dan Devine. I'm a senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, and I'm talking to you first this week because my partner, Jake Fisher, is out on assignment, which means that I'm the admiral of the NC Armada this week, and it also means that I need someone else to talk to. So joining me today, proprietor of the Substack, TomTheFinder.com, analytics insider for the Portland Trailblazers broadcast, and now a regular contributor with us here at Yahoo Sports, it is Tom Haberstroh. Tom, how are you doing today?
I am good. I have one more ad on that, if I can.
Yes, by all means. Plug up top.
Yeah, Kevin Arnovitz and I, we do a Top Chef recap pod, and it's called Pack Your Knives. And so if you're listening to this and you're wishing that, what if two NBA guys could cover Top Chef like it's the NBA? I have the podcast for you. So go check that out, packyourknives.com. We big episode last night. Frank Lloyd Wright. A lot of stuff happened. So coming off of that too here.
That's incredible. Please give my regards to Mr. Arnovitz. It's been too long since I've seen him and talked to him. So that's a wonderful addition to the list of plugs. And today we're going to do some more plugging along as we get here towards the very tail end of the 2023-24 NBA regular season, getting ready for the play-in tournament and the postseason. We're going to talk about who has the most on the line heading into these playoffs. But first, we're going to hit a little bit of news up top. News came down on Wednesday that Drew Holiday and the Celtics have reportedly reached agreement on a four-year, $135 million extension of his contract. The details: Holiday is going to decline the 2024-25 player option from the deal he signed in Milwaukee. Would have paid him about $37.4 million next season. He's going to re-up on a deal where the year one salary is about 7% less, saves the Celtics owners a bunch in luxury tax payments next season. But then he's going to get about $98 to $100 million in new money through 2027-28. The deal locks up Boston's entire top eight through next season and keeps the good times rolling in Boston, where they've basically lapped the Eastern Conference. Tom, your first reaction to hearing that Drew Holiday is going to stay in Boston for the next few years?
He's their Andre Iguodala. That's their guy that they're, you know, as he enters into his late 30s, he's a very cerebral player, multiple positions that he can guard. He had kind of an earlier in his career as the guy for his team and now is going to be their like elder statesman. And it reminded me a lot of Andre Iguodala with the Golden State Warriors. Is we want to look, Steph's great. Klay's great. Draymond's great. But the guy who kind of makes everything work in between is going to be Drew Holiday, the same way that Andre Iguodala was for the Warriors. And so, yeah, you might look at this and say, man, they've got another supermax extension for Jason Tatum on the horizon. Same already inked for Jaylen Brown. They've inked Kristaps Porzingis to an extension already for a couple more years. These things are starting to add up. But what I like about it is this is what we want our super teams or our title contenders to do, is to retain their top talent and go all in. And so Drew Holiday, as just the idea of Drew Holiday, he's older, but so is Andre Iguodala. And I love kind of the symmetry of they were on the Sixers back in the day together.
That's right.
Pre-Sam Hinkie. And so there's kind of that full circle moment for Drew Holiday. And now Andre Iguodala is the head of the players union, who's, you know, arguing for raises for players at this age in their career. So hats off to the players union for trying to find ways that players in their 30s can get these big paydays, and you're seeing it here with Drew. Now, the questions are, can he perform at a high level in the postseason when it matters most? And they're making this extension right now before we can kind of get an answer to that question, which is making for good theater. You know, Dan, like they make this commitment right before we can kind of really understand what Drew Holiday for this Celtics iteration looks like in the postseason.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we mentioned it last week because Jake Fisher, always gone but not forgotten. Jake had written, gotten some time with Drew last week and wrote a story about it. And that's really the only lingering question there is, we saw in Milwaukee, he was like a 39.5% three-point shooter in the regular season with the Bucks. And then that went down to like 30.4% in the playoffs. And so even during the runs, you know, the title run, the offensive game for Drew waned a bit, especially when it came to the jump shot. And so that's going to be a big issue or a big something to keep an eye on here in Boston. But as you mentioned, the difference is the role is so much more circumscribed and it's incredibly broad in terms of the number of things they have him doing, but it's also more narrowly tailored in a way. Like it's kind of everything all at once, but also through a keyhole. Like he is switching so much more than he ever did in Milwaukee under Bud. He's like playing the centers and in the middle of a matchup zone. He's spending so much more time in the corners than he ever did because he's not running pick and roll as much. He's not ISOing as much. He's spacing the floor for them. And like all of these boxes that they needed checked, he's checking all of them. A number that I loved and just started researching it this morning, he has made more corner threes this season than he made in Milwaukee. He has made 55 corner threes this morning. He made 54 in three seasons as a Buck.
And that's the big number. Go ahead.
I know I'm stepping on the bit. I apologize. We're going to get back to the big number in a little bit. But it's just you could not possibly ask for more from Drew Holiday, the player, for what he's given Boston this regular season. And it is a team that has built itself into just a regular season juggernaut where everything is going, like all will come down to where are they in May and June. And this is obviously a pretty significant vote of confidence in what Drew Holiday can provide on those stages for the Celtics. And now, you know, it's going to cost a pretty penny for them to see it, but they're paying to kind of buy their card on the river here. And they're going to find out what it turns over. Speaking of teams that are about to be entering postseason play, which is a mind-blowing truth given where this franchise has been the last few years, but a pretty wild thing happened on February 13th, 2024. No, it's not just that it was the night before Valentine's Day and men all over our fair land were scrambling for flowers and chocolates and whatever. The Orlando Magic played their first nationally televised game since the 2020 bubble.
Wild.
For the uninitiated, a quick recap on this year's Magic. They're good. They've been good like all year. They're entering Thursday's games 46-34, number two defense in the NBA, according to Cleaning the Glass. Head coach Jamal Mosley, one of the favorites for the Coach of the Year award this season. Currently in fifth in the East and still they're a game up on the seven-seeded Sixers. Projection models still give them anywhere from like a 60 to 80% chance of finishing top six, making the playoffs proper, avoiding the play-in. And they've got a guy who is the reigning rookie of the year. He has played in almost every game this season. He's improved just about every per game average from last year. He made his first All-Star team and is one of the best players on a playoff team. And there's a decent chance that like a lot of the country hasn't watched him play since he was at Duke. We're talking about Paolo Banchero here, and he's going to be playing in important playoff games on national TV. So we wanted to offer an opportunity to learn a little bit about Paolo Banchero. We're going to play a game here, Tom. Imagine you have to describe Paolo Banchero, the basketball player, to someone who's like familiar with current and recent NBA basketball, but hasn't seen him play. Where is your first sort of point of comparison in doing so?
I don't want to steal your thunder here.
Steal away. I got thunderbolts coming out the ass. Don't worry about it.
Okay, great.
Sentence. Shouldn't have said that. Feel guilty immediately.
I had some visuals here that was just fantastic. And I do not take this out of the pod. I promise you, I will never come back here if you take that out. All right. So thunderbolts coming out of your ass, but aside from that.
Yes.
I think that Blake Griffin is a wonderful comp for Paolo Banchero. Felt that when he was at Duke. And a lot of that is just his size and his skill. He doesn't have the same sort of like, he's going to posterize everybody at one point or another. He, for my taste, he settles for a little too many jumpers.
Sure.
But his passing, his dribbling, his vision, his physical, just sheer power reminds me a lot of Blake Griffin. And I know that you see the same sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I kind of tried to thread a little bit of a needle with it because the game reminds me of sort of like Pistons era Blake, where he'd sort of developed his skills and his craft and moved a little bit more toward the perimeter after some of his injuries. But the physicality and athleticism, I mean, it's not the jump out the gym athleticism that you're, as you mentioned with Blake, like there, I have yet to see Paolo Banchero Mozgov somebody, but I certainly am open to the possibility of that happening. I would love to see it. Have not used Mozgov as a verb in a few years, so it's good to bring that one back into the lexicon. But the just like the sheer physicality and force that he plays with does feel a little bit like young Blake. And so the needle thread for me, maybe like the point of transition that I feel like is maybe an aspirational goal for Paolo's game is like, remember that it was that 2015 playoffs for Blake, and it's that round one where there was like the epic Clippers Spurs series. And then round two, they go and they're playing the Rockets and they're up in the series. But then the crazy Corey Brewer, Josh Smith come back and everything goes sort of downhill from there for LA. But in that postseason, Blake averaged 25.5 points, just under 13 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal and a block per game on 51% shooting. And I'm like, I remember thinking very vividly, like, this is probably about as close as we get to LeBron outside of LeBron. And I kind of feel like if you are, I mean, obviously LeBron is a very aspirational point of comparison for anybody, but if you are aiming at an aspirational sort of player type for Paolo Banchero, where huge point forward, able to overwhelm physically, but also an advancing floor mapper and creator off the bounce and playmaker for others with a jump shot that you have to respect, like that's kind of what the idealized version looks like. Whether he ever gets anywhere near that picture, I have no idea. But that version of Blake made me think of that sort of ceiling. And when you see Banchero at his best, that's kind of the same picture I have in my brain.
Okay, so I'm going to give you another picture in your brain, okay?
Yes.
In your head, Detroit Blake Griffin, and then Clippers Blake Griffin, the halfway point between that on the map. You're just thinking, okay, halfway between, where is that? Well, I have the answer. Okay, geographically, the answer between what is the halfway point on the U.S. map between L.A. and Detroit is Julesburg, Colorado. Julesburg, Colorado. Just looking this up at meatways.com. I don't know if this is a real thing or like what kind of, I shouldn't be like endorsing this website, but there is a little thing that says the J&L Cafe in Sterling, Colorado has 4.5 stars on Yelp. So J&L Cafe, if you're in the neighborhood of Julesburg, Colorado, go check it out because you might see Blake Griffin or Paolo Banchero there because that's in our head. That the midpoint between those two careers is right there in Julesburg, Colorado. So Dan, I'm with you on this, and I'm glad you brought up those numbers and the memories because I ran the numbers. I did some research in addition to looking at meatways.com. I went to stathead.com and I wanted to see statistically, when you look at Paolo Banchero through two seasons, what are the comps? And so what I did at the glorious website that is stathead.com, I found Paolo Banchero's points per 100 possessions, rebounds, and assist rates, which is 30 points, about 9.8 rebounds and 6.6 assists. So 39 and 6. And I kind of lowered the sliders a little bit, dialed it back to, I want to see all the players in their first two seasons average 28, 8, and 5 through their first two seasons. And it spat out a list of 8 names. Here are those names. And I'm not saying, I didn't do like a ceiling on these. So sometimes you're going to get like to 17 rebounds per 100 possessions. But here are the 8 names that cross that Paolo Banchero threshold. You ready for this?
Let's hear it.
All right. LeBron James, Michael Jordan,
okay,
Luka Doncic, Wemby, LaMelo Ball, Vince Carter, and Mark Aguirre.
Ooh.
I said Mark Maguire. different player, different athlete. But Mark Aguirre, in addition to another former Piston, Blake Griffin. You nailed it, Dan. Blake Griffin is also in that category of points, yes, rebounds, and assists. Statistically, it is a very fair comp for Paolo Banchero. Mark Aguirre is the first one that I was like, oh, you know what? Those other names, I get it. passing bigs or at least super skilled like Vince Carter and high flyer. We're talking like some of the best dunkers of all time, Michael Jordan, Vince Carter, LeBron James. So it tracks. Mark Aguirre. Okay, for those who are listening at home who want to know a little bit, all the Gen Z or millennials that aren't familiar with his game, I pulled up an LA Times story about Mark Aguirre and Isaiah Thomas, who grew up next to each other in Chicago. And the reason why I pulled this up, Dan, is because we want to learn about Paolo Banchero, but we kind of need to know those who blazed the path before Paolo Banchero to understand the true Paolo Banchero. So we're going to learn why Mark Aguirre's nicknames on Basketball Reference are Ziggy, the Pillsbury Doughboy, Elephant Drawers, the Muffin Man, and Fat Daddy. Okay. The origins of these nicknames.
I'm sorry, Tom. I'm so frustrated that now I have to cross every single one of these nicknames off the list for myself. Like now I can no longer ask people, and which is really embarrassing when you're asking people to call you something. But like that, so that's most of my list.
Elephant Drawers. We all want to be named Elephant Drawers. So I'm like, where did these names come from? So I did some more research here. You know, journalism, I feel like, is waning in today's society. So I feel like we're doing our part here to understand the etymology and the origins of Elephant Drawers and the Muffin Man. So according to the LA Times, I'm just going to read this on a story about Mark Aguirre and Isaiah Thomas. Quote, they were bosom basketball buddies. They grew up 8 blocks apart on Chicago's seedy west side. To friends and rivals, Aguirre was never called Mark. He was laundry bag, big drawers. Doughboy, because of his shape. His own high school coach called him Ziggy the Elephant. Okay? It continues. Thomas was the opposite. A waif, a peanut, a Zeke the Mouse, but he could handle a basketball. At 3, he would put on dribbling exhibitions for Our Lady of Sorrows, lead the older boys onto the court before games. Reader's Digest even ran a photograph of little Isaiah doing his act. And then Isaiah says, my first memory of Mark was at Martin Luther King Boys Club. We'd choose up sides, but he wouldn't get chosen. Quote, too fat.
Oh.
Love it. I love this. So we're learning that Mark Aguirre, and yeah, he's got a bulky build when he was with the Mavs and the Pistons.
Yep.
And same thing with Paolo Banchero, is he's a big, beefy dude. And so while we can't call him Elephant Drawers or Pillsbury Doughboy, because that's already been taken by Mark Aguirre, we can now understand that statistically, he is the Mark Aguirre of 2024.
I love so much about this. I love, first off, the positive body positivity way to frame this is like, so many coaches will tell you that a little extra weight on a player, that's just a potential. All that is an opportunity to get that guy in better shape. And then you see where, you know, where he is after that, what kind of player is resulting from that work. I love that laundry bag is a nickname that, I mean, I might wind up taking that. I know that the other ones are off the board, but laundry bag, I feel like I might wind up taking, because it's not on basketballreference.com. And I also love the framing of just like, this is the, you know, Aguirre's size being something that translates over for Paolo, because I have some other comps here that are less thought through and more just sort of one line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of them is Thick Tatum. because and part of that is maybe the Duke thing, but it's also like stylistically maybe settles for jumpers a little too much, but you know, a tall playmaker who can use his physicality to get his shot when he wants to, when he gets downhill is a handful to deal with. And there is a sort of a smoothness to the game that I was like, if you sort of just adjusted the sliders on Tatum's width about, you know, 15 extra percent, you know, you did like the sort of stretch and skew in Photoshop and just sort of moved it out a little bit. Could kind of see that if you squint.
Well, I'm glad you said handful, because I forgot one thing about Mark Aguirre. Okay.
I don't want you to forget anything about it. I want all of it.
All right. Coach Meyer, one of his former coaches, said he arrived. He's talking about Mark Aguirre. He arrived with a pair of hands so large that Coach Meyer memorably described them as big as toilet seats. So big as toilet seats. I feel like we've lost those kind of similes and metaphors. Like, I always want like 80s and 90s, like, his hands over there, they're big as toilet seats. We don't get that anymore. We need more of that.
Well, I think it's like, because you all of those sorts of things have to be appended with like, not in a bad way. It's like, normally if you compare somebody's body to toilets, it's like not a great thing. So you have to be like, no, I mean it as a compliment, not an insult. But I love you. Yeah, I mean, going past like catcher's mitts or whatever to toilet seat, incredible, absolutely incredible.
But you were saying you have Thick Tatum and you have more names that or one liners.
I've got a few more one liners. Actually, one of them is like a little bit boring. It's maybe more accurate, but it's a little boring. It's just Bullets. Chris Webber is kind of.
That's good. Yeah,
but there's not a joke in there. It's just Bullets. Chris Webber. What if Julius Randle chilled out a little? Is one.
Mm-hmm.
Stylistically, again, you know, 20 point score, big. I mean, he doesn't rebound at quite the level you'd want from, or that some of these other guys do. But stylistically, big bruising. I am a point forward. I get downhill, etc.
What about? I thought of this morning. I wonder if the heliocentric era, a lot of players who were kind of back to the basket bigs, but had a lot more skill and finesse and could dunk over everybody would be more thought of as kind of this versatile player. I was thinking about Chris Bosh because of his silky smooth jumper, his versatility, and, you know, Toronto Raptors CB4 Chris Bosh was a monster, right? And he actually literally like beefed up big time in that final season before going to the Miami Heat. I kind of thought of him as like not known as a lockdown defender, but could play the five and was cerebral enough and skilled enough that if you put the ball in his hands, he's going to make the right play. And so Chris Bosh, while he doesn't have the same physique as Paolo Banchero, I feel like he fits the profile of like way more skilled than just the 20, 25 and 10 guy.
Absolutely. And it's like, we thought of him at that point, maybe earlier in his career, like, well, he's like the next Texas big guy like that, like, you know, like LaMarcus Aldridge, where it's the mid-range jumpers, right? And a lot of, and then Bosh was like, there's actually a lot more to me. Like, and not that there wasn't a whole lot to LaMarcus Aldridge, obviously, but that his game could sort of scale up and scale down and move out to the perimeter in different ways that LaMarcus didn't even sort of sniff until the very, sort of like the end of his career in San Antonio. I love that as a, like, there's more, if you scratch the surface with this guy, you're going to find more there. I think that's probably true for Banchero, and he's only, 21 years old. Like, we're going to find more as we go along. I think the first playoff series for him is going to reveal a lot about where the league sees, you know, the pressure points with him and then how he is able to respond to that. As with all great players, you know, you see how teams guard you when the games matter most, and then you have to respond and adjust to that. And that's real. I mean, those are all really smart thoughts. I have some more dumb jokes. Chevy Suburban Pascal Siakam.
You went with Chevy, not like a GMC Yukon on that one. Isn't it so weird that like car companies just put out the same car with a different label and hope that no one notices? Like, remember Dodge Caravans and like Plymouth Voyagers? Like, my mom had a Dodge Caravan, and we would just go into this white with the wood paneling side
wood
Dodge
paneling.
Caravan. Yeah, just classic. Another thing we need to bring back from the 80s and 90s. but then, like, you'd see, like, a Plymouth Voyager down the street, and you're like, wait, is that the same car? How did they get away with this? Chevy Suburban, GMC Yukon, Pascal Siakam. I feel like it's Chevy Suburban on this one. Great choice here, rather than the other one. Yeah.
I mean, you wind up with sort of big Spider-Man pointing at big Spider-Man meme. But like, yeah, if you stretch Pascal about 2 inches high and 2 inches wide, and then ask him to stop spinning as much is kind of what we wind up with. Second contract, Antoine Walker. So it's not like right when he comes out of Kentucky, but it's like, and before we get all the way to like, I'm taking 9 threes a game before that's something that's considered okay. Like in that sweet spot, maybe like right before Paul Pierce gets there. I don't know. Like, that's kind of where I feel like I could see that.
You want to hear my favorite Antoine Walker stat?
Yes, of course I do, Tom.
Okay. Remember that line he had, Dan, that when someone was like, why do you take so many threes? Do you remember what his response was?
Because there aren't any fours.
Exactly. Do you, it's like one of my favorite lines of all time.
Yeah.
So a few years ago, remember when like James Harden was getting all these three shot fouls and like
yes.
it was a huge talking point in the league, right? And I did this like big profile on just like the evolution of the three shot foul. The player that took the most threes without ever scoring a four pointer.
No way.
Antoine Walker.
Wow. That's like tragic.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Like the guy who said the greatest line of I take so many threes because there are no fours, never got to score a four-pointer in his career despite taking so many threes.
That's, oh man.
Right?
I feel like I'm going to have to go like look at a body of water and contemplate existence a little bit later, like to find that Antoine Walker had no fours. Like, oh my goodness.
Never got one. Hey, refs, you know what? If we can, like, look, the Tim Donaghy thing, real bad thing that happened with the league. But right up there on the list, not giving Antoine Walker a fouled made three so he can finally get his four.
Oh, my God. I mean, listen, hope springs eternal. We might need Antoine to get, like, I don't know where he's at in his journey. Maybe he can get to the big three. I don't know. Maybe he can get on the three, like, the three-on-three Team USA. Like, we got to get him in the building for one of these opportunities to see if he can get to a four-point line. My last one here. All right. And I need you to be with me, Tom. I need you to be with me here.
Man, you've been with me this whole pod, and I'm going into like toilet hands and Antoine Walker four-point line. So, man, I am with you the whole way.
I've got four words to wrap us up here. Fever dream Josh McRoberts?
McBob. McBob on a fever dream. I love it. McRoberts is another Dookie. You've got the Duke connection too.
I mean, it's a happy accident, but I'm like, there was a point where it's like, he's shooting better than people realize. He's got more hops than people realize.
Yes.
He's a good passer. He's a good rebounder. He's like, he sort of thinks the game real well. I'm like, if there's like a max out, you know, you hack into the game and you're like, I'm going to bump him up to 99. I'm going to do like get all the VC in 2K and like add up his skill set. Like if you pushed I kind of wanted to make sure there was a transracial component to this too. I'm like, I don't just want to compare only white guys to white guys, only black guys to black guys. Can we find like, what is the idealized Josh McRoberts? The idealized Josh McRoberts might be Paolo Banchero.
Yeah. And by the way, people forget. Josh McRoberts, when he was at Duke, was like the number one prospect. Like into Duke, he was like, everyone was talking about that too. I want to say, and I'm going to pull it up on Basketball Reference, because one thing that's great about Basketball Reference is they have like the high school recruiting ranks.
Right.
And
yeah.
There you go. 2005, Monte Ellis was number two. Martell Webster was number three. Tyler Hansbrough was number four. Lou Williams here on this list. Lou Williams was at five. Those were the top five top recruits in that class. Number one, Josh McRoberts.
Incredible. And somehow we've gotten in the space of the first like 25 minutes or so of this show to people forget Josh McRoberts was a problem. People forget Josh McRoberts is a bucket and people don't know. So kids, listeners out there, in the service of providing some context for Paolo Banchero and the potentially play-in bound Orlando Magic, we'll see how the next couple of games go. We've given you some context with which to appreciate it. One more thing I want to make sure we appreciate, though, before we move on and we get to an ad break to pay some bills, is that while Paolo Banchero is the all-star on this team, maybe the most important guy on this Magic team is Franz Wagner. And if you note, they've lost the last couple of games. They got drilled in the last couple of games. Franz Wagner out with a right ankle sprain. And a couple more big numbers here to talk through. For the season, the Magic are plus six in more than 2,700 minutes with Paolo Banchero on the floor, plus 188. In just under 2,300 minutes with Franz on the floor. They outscore teams by 12.5 points per 100 possessions with Franz Wagner on and Paolo Banchero off. They get outscored by nearly 4 points per 100 with Paolo on and Franz off. So Paolo's the star, and he deserves all the recognition and credit that, you know, people like us talking about toilet hands and Chevy Suburban Pascal Siakams will give him. But if you're looking for a player to keep an eye on in terms of the rising and falling fates of the Orlando Magic as we head into the postseason here, keep an eye on Franz Wagner because he's super duper important for them.
I feel like there are a lot of these guys that as we go into the postseason here, there's the star, but then there's also like this other injury factor that we are going to be underlining and circling and saying the legacy about this player, Paolo Banchero, if they flame out in the first round because Franz just isn't Franz, we should remember that. It's so hard to remember these things because we have like Homer Simpson, like we just have so many things going into our brains that we just inevitably forget it because there's only a finite room up there. I feel like there's so much of that this year, that there's injuries across the board, that what we think about with this Orlando Magic team and Paolo Banchero, I kind of feel like in some ways I would rather them be like the sixth seed, because I feel like the expectations way too high if they get that second seed. In the same way the Sacramento Kings last year, it felt like they were on the ascent, and it also felt like maybe we're getting a little too ahead of ourselves. And that's how I feel about the Orlando Magic team. Think like long-term trajectory wise, I kind of feel like it's healthier for them to be a six seed rather than like as high as a two seed at like a week ago, they could have been the two seed.
Yeah. It's, and you know, so much of this is about expectations. Our old friend, Paul Flannery, I've invoked this line a number of times on this show and other shows, would say the best time you can have in this league is right before you get good. Because once you get good, everyone starts expecting more and more and more. But what, right now, like there's a version of this that's all gravy for the Magic. I mean, they've more than doubled their win total over the last couple of years from 2 years ago. Like this is no one heading into the season expected this. So going into it, yeah, as an underdog in a first round series with an opportunity to, you know, throw an uppercut at a favorite, that's one thing. But going in as a high seed without the experience, with the opportunity to wind up sort of falling short and stumbling and then elevating the pressure on everybody, that's maybe a tough spot to be in. But speaking of some of those injuries, we're going to hit on one of those when we get back, or one of those injury situations, the X factor players. We're going to hit on one of those when we get back. We're going to take a quick break and then come back to talk about everybody's favorite team, not just mine, right? The New York Knickerbockers. So stick around. We'll have some more No Cap Room right after this. Welcome back to No Cap Room. I'm Dan Devine. I'm here with Tom Haberstroh. And I wanted to take an opportunity here to just be very excited about the fact that The Big Number is appearing on Yahoo Sports right now. One of my favorite video series, sort of a long-running thing that Tom has been working on. And the version of it that just went up this week was on the number 20. Can you tell me about why 20 is a big number here, Tom?
Because OG Anunoby of the New York Knicks has a positive plus minus in 20 straight games, which is absurd. I could not believe it. Like in the first few games where his like plus minus, remember his plus minus was like 34 one night and then 21 the next night. And the Knicks were just rolling teams with OG on the floor. It hasn't stopped. It really is amazing when you think about it. The record in the last 30 years is 29. So he's approaching he's played in only 20 games with the Knicks, Dan.
Right. And every one that he's been in is the craziest part.
The team hasn't gone cold. And then like, you know, a player gets hurt and then he's, you know, just happens to be on the floor. The other team hasn't gone on this like ridiculous flame run when OG's on the floor. Every single time that OG has been on the floor for the Knicks, they've won. They've won that stint. And what's crazy is, you know, I think we all liked OG Anunoby coming into this Knicks squad. I don't think we figured out or fathomed how perfect he is in the Tibbs system and that they can throw him on anybody. And he's all defense. We know that he's an incredible player on both ends of the floor. But this week's big number is 20. And by the way, it could be 22. I had this editorial decision, Dan. I actually didn't do 22, but he has done two additional games with the Toronto Raptors before the trade. So the uncut version of this week's big number is actually 22, that he's had 22 straight games with a positive plus minus. And I think the next active high is like 7.
That's incredible. And you're absolutely right. Like it bears out every time you watch him on the floor with the Knicks. The degree to which he just sort of bumps everybody else into a role that makes a little more sense for them. Like Josh Hart is a little overtaxed asking him to be like the number one defensive stopper on big wings, right? So now He doesn't do that. He's able to play more in the passing lanes where he's incredible, just like Dante DiVincenzo. And that makes the Knicks defense as a whole function so much better, gets them out in transition more often, which maybe in an ideal set of circumstances lightens the load on Jalen Brunson, who's got to do so much shot creation in the half court. The way he's able to stretch the floor as a corner shooter opens things up for Brunson and his ISOs and his drives. He's such a complimentary star, right? Like coaches also often talk about stars in their role. Anunoby is that guy because he sort of becomes a force multiplier for everybody else in the rotation and in the lineup when he's out there. And that's something that I know when I wrote about Julius Randle's season-ending injury last week at Yahoo Sports, that was kind of the glass half full look at where it's a damaging injury no matter what, because Randle, when healthy, is maybe the best option the Knicks have for surviving offensively in the minutes that Brunson sits. Now, there won't be very many of those come the postseason, but still, if you get blitzed by 10 in 4 minutes with your number one guy on the bench, that can swing a game and that can swing a series. And the Knicks obviously struggled a lot with that against the Miami Heat in the second round last season. But the goal, or the glass half full look, was if they get Anunoby back healthy, you slot him in at the four, you keep Hart and DiVincenzo on the wing, Brunson, and then whichever of Isaiah Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson is at the five. And you've got a lineup that makes sense on both ends of the floor and can do some damage. And it's continued to bear out in the numbers. So far, 256 minutes of Brunson and Anunoby together without Randle. The Knicks have outscored teams by 128 points in 256 minutes. I'm not so good at math, but I'm pretty sure that's 1/2. So that's by a point every 2 minutes, which would be 24 points in a 48-minute game, which is a blowout win pretty much whenever they've been able to have Anunoby on the court with Brunson. So the hope here is that, you know, the Knicks are able to keep rolling with that. But I think it begs the question, if they're able to sort of keep this rolling, how far do you see the Knicks being able to go in the playoffs, assuming the health of Anunoby's elbow holds up?
I think they can get to the East Finals if that elbow is okay, and that elbow is not okay. I remember when it happened. It happened to be a Blazers game when he re-aggravated the injury. By the way, is aggravated the right word there, or is it re-aggravated? I think aggravated if you do it the first time, right?
Yeah. Like it's since the surgery he aggravated the repaired injury. So right. I don't know.
Re-aggravated would be redundant. Okay, so he aggravated the injury. Thank you, Dan, my English teacher here. he aggravated the injury against the Blazers and was screaming. He audibly yelled, and people in the arena were like, oh my God, take him out of the game. They kept him in, and they just, Tibbs just was like, yeah, you're still playing. And he was laboring on the floor. And any other coach, we'd be like, what are you doing? Come on. But then when it's Tibbs, you're like, yeah, that's just Tibbs. So
kind of how he does it, right?
Yeah. And for better or for worse, he makes sure that his guys are on the floor and to their detriment sometimes. And then, he had to miss some more time. And OG is one of these players that again, Drew Holiday, Andre Iguodala, that they're miscast as a 25-point scorer or the lead guy. But if you have him as your number three, he's awesome. And if his elbow's not working, that's a problem because of those corner threes. You need him to be hitting at a league average rate there just to give that extra space on those Jalen drives. And the other thing here is very important journalism here. I was thinking, does OG stand for only gains?
It certainly seems to be to make sense. I mean, the team is only gaining on the opposition when he's on the floor.
Only gains. So, I like it. I threw it out there in the big number video, which you can catch on Yahoo Sports NBA. I'm proud of it and also not proud of it. Only
gains. I understand
gains.
That feeling. I mean, also he's swole as all get out. I mean, you certainly hope the elbow is not swollen, but broadly, he's an extraordinarily strong gentleman. And so, yeah, he's certainly experiencing nothing but gains on the floor. I think you're right to point at that Eastern Finals as it's an aspirational goal, but it's not necessarily crazy, right? The Knicks, as it stands right now, they're most likely to finish third. I mean, projection models have them finishing third. that would mean, you know, obviously a lot of furniture moving around in that middle pack of the East. But if they wind up in 3-6 against, say, the Pacers, right? That Indiana team can be really dangerous with a healthy Tyrese Halliburton. He has not been particularly healthy the last couple of months since the hamstring injury that he had, although his shooting has begun to tick up more the last like 10, 12 games. So, you know, you got to deal with a dangerous opponent there. And your worry in that matchup is, oh my goodness, it's a repeat of Trae Young dicing us up, you know, pick and roll ball handler who can pull up from wherever, slicing and dicing us. And, you know, the Knicks wind up in a disappointing round one upset. And the, you know, more optimistic view, since I've got light coming from behind me, we're going to be optimistic moving forward.
Lightning bolts coming out of your ass as That's well exactly as right. thunder. Yeah,
exactly right. Which is deeply uncomfortable for everybody. No, I mean, not least of all me, since I'm the one they're coming
You're
out
the
of.
You're the one who said it. I'm not
I know. And Frank, yeah, as you said, I'm proud of it and I'm ashamed of it at the same time. but that Knicks team was entirely different than this Knicks team, right? Like the only player likely to play meaningful minutes from that team on this roster would be Mitchell Robinson, because Randall's out. Alec Burks had his interregnum moving to Detroit and then coming back. And if he plays meaningful minutes, Tom Thibodeau and I need to have a conversation. But that Knicks team did not have Jalen Brunson. That Knicks team did not have OG Anunoby or Josh Hart or Dante DiVincenzo, a much stronger overall quality of squadron. So the idea is, like, you put that team, the Knicks would be favored in that series, whether, you know, whatever the situation would be. You say they get that series. If you win that series, you move into round two and you're dealing with a perhaps injury mitigated Giannis Antetokounmpo in round two. Or if a 7 seed out of the play-in knocks off Milwaukee in round one, which I think we have to at least consider inside the realm of possibilities here, then you're within striking distance of the conference finals, right? Like, that's not outside the realm of possible outcomes for the Knicks. And I don't know. I think that was considered like a high-end, pie-in-the-sky maybe outcome start of the season, and that we are now in the last couple of games of the season here. And that is maybe within realistic grasp, I think, speaks to the significant impact that Anunoby has had since his arrival.
Yeah, and it really is important to note that, like, Julius Randle on paper and what he brings to the team is valuable. But what he takes away from the team defensively in those postseason matchups, and some of his decision making can be problematic in big moments. But OG Anunoby sliding over to the four, and then you have Josh Hart at the three and DiVincenzo at the two. Like, I feel really confident with that unit, as long as they can score. Like, Jalen Brunson, if he somehow doesn't have it, or the whistle isn't going his way, in the playoffs, it's going to get really ugly if they get some more, you know, if OG can kind of take that next level and be able to create efficient looks for his teammates, then you don't miss Julius Randle as much. And when the injury happened, same thing I felt with Karl Anthony Towns. The backups for that player, in some ways, there's going to be some Ewing theory potential with Julius Randle and Karl Anthony Towns, as we saw with Naz Reid. It's just like, man, they're not losing all that much without right. that star player. Not to say that he's not a star, but they're complementary players that elevate their roles in place of that star player. I actually think this Knicks team, if they're healthy, I have more confidence in them without Julius Randle than with them. And maybe that's just more my confidence in OG and Josh Hart getting those minutes than if they were having to, like, cede that to Julius Randle. But I don't know where you're at on the Julius Randle experience. I think he's a good offensive player, a star. But with this team in the playoffs, making it 90s basketball, like grinding it out, I kind of feel like this formation might be their best chance.
There's a definite, I mean, it's a reasonable argument, especially if the idea is you are redistributing a lot of those touches and that usage to Brunson, who is just like flat out a more efficient player and somebody that I think you've got a lot more confidence in shot creation in a postseason environment than Randle. And one of the things, and this makes for a neat transition here, one of the biggest bummers for me about the Randle situation, I talked about it last week on the show, is this was going to be an opportunity for him to kind of rewrite the story in the postseason after a couple of disappointing outings for him. He was a player that profiled as having a lot on the line heading into this postseason. He's not going to get the opportunity to have that chance to rewrite the story. There are some players, though, that are going to have an awful lot on the line as they head into the series, into the postseason here, whether that's a lot to gain, a lot to lose reputationally, a lot to lose financially. You know, there's a lot to consider here. And with the playoffs right around the corner and the sort of significant impact hanging over players, coaches, and teams, wanted to talk a little bit about who some of those players were that we think are maybe have the most on the line in the postseason. So, Tom, why don't you get us started? Who to you is somebody that has an awful lot on the line riding on this postseason?
The number one guy on my list is Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum, to me, is kind of in this zone right now where we don't really know how good he is. We don't, even though we've seen him in the playoffs so many times. And I think through his career, he's played how many seasons now is it? Like he's, let's see here. It's
seven
seasons.
Yeah.
And every season, he's, with the exception one, well, this one, he hasn't had his postseason yet. He's been in the playoffs every single season of his career. And we still kind of feel like, okay, is he the number one on a championship team?
Right.
We don't know that. And whether that's a fake concept, like the idea of being a number one on a championship team, we kind of feel like with the chips onto the table right now, the Boston Celtics are the favorite. They're about to win, what, 65 games this season? And he's not an MVP. He's not in the MVP conversation. But I feel like with his crunch time woes in the playoffs the last few years, that is really the only thing standing between them and a championship, in my opinion, is I think they roll against the Miami Heat the last couple of years if they get some really strong play out of Jason Tatum in those big moments. And clutch can be very fickle. You know, like I laugh at like Skip Bayless and the whole idea of a clutch gene. I'm not right. trying to say that he doesn't have the clutch gene, even though two big numbers ago, I pointed out that his efficiency in big moments is some of the worst over the last three seasons, regular season and postseason, compared to his, like, you know, all NBA peers. And Jaylen Brown is actually way more efficient. So if you haven't checked that out, the big numbers debut a couple weeks ago got a lot of flack from the New England contingency, which
they're normally pretty nuanced and chill about that kind of conception of their players. So I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, very surprised about Boston in that sense. They're usually, you know, they're really campaigning for Marcus Smart as like the greatest defender in the NBA. And then when they get Drew Holiday, they're like, wait, no. Love this guy, Drew. Like, let's sign him to an extension. By the way, we didn't really talk about that whole aspect of like the Drew Holiday extension is like, do they still prefer, you know, Marcus Smart, the Defensive Player of the Year award winner a couple years ago, which I laughed at that when it happened. And now I don't know. He had a tough year injury wise. This is a detour. Jason Tatum is number one on my list.
Sure. It's a completely valid pick. I mean, yeah, you know, the reputational stakes, like this team has everything it needs, right? Like the Celtics enter Thursday with the fifth largest average margin of victory ever, according to Stathead.
Right. Yeah.
The four teams ahead of them all won the title, and those teams are all like Mount Rushmore type teams. The 72 Lakers that won 33 straight, the Kareem and Oscar 71 Bucks, the 72 win 96 Bulls, and the first year of Durant on the Warriors. Those are the only teams that have a better point differential to this point than these Celtics. They're going to have home court advantage in every series they play. The Celtics, as you mentioned, the playoffs every year of Tatum's career, more postseason wins than anybody but the Warriors in this that span in Tatum's career. They've done everything but win a title. And so this is it. This is what's left. And the organization has put everything around Tatum and the Tatum Brown core to put it in position to finally reach the top of that particular mountain. And there's a million reasons why maybe they don't get there, right? Like the reality, and as you mentioned with the sort of the way that Tatum's evaluated compared to his peers, is like he's just not quite at that level. Like he's in the MVP conversation to the extent that it is he fifth? That is the place in the conversation he occupies, because he's, I think most observers look at it and say, in terms of just like individual ability or individual production, he is not at the level of Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's not at the level of Nikola Jokic. He's not at the level of Luka Doncic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. You know, insert players here. Joel Embiid. He has had more success collectively than almost all those guys, except for Jokic, obviously. But, and maybe some of that, you know, Ben Golliver, our old buddy, mentioned this on Divine Intervention on Tuesday. Like, Tatum deserves some credit for pulling back to make more space for all these other guys to play to the level that they have and sort of take the reins of the team in that way. But when, it, you know, rubber meets the road in these, you know, late season games, in these biggest moments of the season, those guys have been the ones to elevate their teams. And Tatum has yet to do that, with the exceptions, and they're really significant real exceptions, of 46 in game six in Milwaukee, yeah, right, in 2022, and 51 in game seven against the Sixers last year. Like, he's done that in playoff games, just not at the championship level. And so for him to be in that set of circumstances, like, everything will be judged by that. You're absolutely right. Like, a wonderful season, historic regular season. You know, ask how that went for Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell in Salt Lake City, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That without a conference finals or a finals or a title, like, doesn't get you too far. So Tatum is a huge one on that list. For me, I'm going to zag a little bit because I know we share some folks on our list. I just mentioned Donovan Mitchell, the Cavs big four. This is like, there's reasons, there's explanations for why Cleveland has struggled the last month. The biggest one is Donovan Mitchell's missed 15 games since the beginning of March, right? He's had injuries, you know, the bone bruise, I believe, in the left knee that needed PRP treatment, broke his nose, you know, friendly fire on a rebound. Like, he's been out of the lineup. He's their number one guy. They're going to struggle. I understand that. But the specifics and the context surrounding that team, they looked great when it was Mitchell and Jared Allen. They've looked great when it's Darius Garland and Evan Mobley. They've looked when all four guys are together. And they went from, I think it was 26-8 in 34 games heading into the All-Star break to 11-17 since it. Mm-hmm. And now they're in a position again where they could finish as high as second. They could drop down. If they go into the first round and get punched in the mouth again, it just feels like a distinct possibility. Like, I have like some real, there's got to be some deja vu vibes about, like, if they draw Orlando in the first round, and it's like, welcome to a team that's just going to beat the hell out of you for, you know, as long as a series lasts, and then see if you are up for it or not. If they get punched in the mouth again and they don't walk through it and survive round one, you kind of feel like management's got to look at the construction of it, right? And wonder, yeah, like, is this what we want to build everything around? And that's a tough place to be, given how successful in the regular season they've been these past couple of seasons, how optimistic everyone has, you know, was even 2 months ago. That's a tough spot to be in right now, but I think it's the spot that they are in.
Yeah, great pick there. And I think JB Bickerstaff in there too, is that he's, I think, a really great coach. If you can't get those four players to perform at their optimal state and win with that kind of talent under your roof, it feels like everything could be on the table for this team. And Dan Gilbert coming out and saying, yeah, we're going to sign this dude to an extension. And Donovan Mitchell's like, you know what? No comment on that. Feels like there's a lot of weight on these guys' shoulders. And like, to your point, like, they could prove everyone wrong and be like, yeah, we're going to make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals here and put all of those concerns to rest. Another team in the East here, we've got Jason Tatum and then basically the Cavs big four. I will throw out Damian Lillard as another
Absolutely.
One. Not just I feel like the Giannis injury lets him off the hook a little bit, but the trade demand out of Portland, then going to Milwaukee, then Adrian Griffin gets fired. It's the blood isn't on Damian Lillard's hands, but right. I think when you look at the fact that he doesn't have a championship, but Giannis does, they trade Drew Holiday, who won a championship with the team. They bring in Doc Rivers to kind of fix this thing. And then now Giannis gets hurt. And that's the thing where it kind of, I think, gives Damian Lillard a little bit of, dials down the temperature a little bit on Damian Lillard. Because if they flame out in the first or second round, I think you can realistically imagine that a lot of that will be due to Giannis's calf strain, whether he comes back and he's not himself or he doesn't come back and it's the Dame Bobby Portis show and it just doesn't hit the same way. If Giannis wasn't hurt, damn, would you put him above Jason Tatum on your list?
Dame, yeah. I mean, because you're absolutely, I mean, the thing that you highlighted, he does not have the pelts on the wall, right? Like even Doc, right? Like Doc Rivers, I know you had written at the Finder a couple months ago, like about the perception of Doc Rivers versus the reality and like the way that he's talked about his reputational, the game of tennis about whether he's like over-respected or under-respected is an interesting one given his resume. But Doc has won a title and has led teams deep into the playoffs. Giannis has won a title. All of the other core guys in Milwaukee have all won it. Dame's the one coming to the party a little light. And the whole point was our offense, especially in the half court and especially in crunch time, dies too often late in these games. You are the Band-Aid for that. You are the tourniquet for that wound. And it's been up and down kind of all season. And so it hasn't looked exactly the way we expected it to on the box, right? It hasn't matched the picture that you got in the store. And if they fall short and it continues to look roughly the way it has during the regular season, a little fits and startsy, the streaky shooting, all that kind of stuff, then yeah, I think Dame wears that to a different degree because he's the, you know, like last guy in the door, fairly or unfairly. So I think you're right to note the temperature goes down a little bit. Everyone's expectations get ratcheted down when your best guy is, you know, hobbled to some degree again. And it remains to be seen how much that will be, you know, the severity of the strain. I know our guy, Jeff Stotts at In Street Clothes had suggested like the average length of time for an exit for or duration of an injury for this, usually about like 2.5 weeks. That, you know, maybe he's back in the middle of the first round, remains to be seen. We'll see, you know, and in what form he is when he comes back, how explosive he can be, all that kind of stuff. But if they, the flip side of it is if, and I know Dame has had some really big games this season when Giannis has been out, if Giannis is out or Giannis is limited and Dame goes nuts and they
carries them, yep.
Yeah, they do win a series, they do win two series, they get to a conference finals. Two conference finals on your resume looks a lot different than one. And the circumstances in which he would be elevating them, I think, burnish his bona fides a little bit. Yeah. So I think that's a good choice. I'm going to go to the West for my next one here. Who did Zion Williamson last play in a postseason game?
Wow. Did he play in the tournament at Duke?
Michigan State. Yeah. The last time that he played in a postseason game was the Elite Eight against Michigan State 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He has never played. He didn't play in the play-in with the Pelicans. He has not played in a playoff series. And so there's a question still, you know, their seeding's very much up in the air in the West right now. So we don't know for sure if he's going to even be in a playoff series, but man, Zion, this is it. Hey Zion, You've done what you can do, your level best this season to kind of rehabilitate the reputation of like, well, he never plays. He got paid all this money, but he's always off the floor.
Yep.
You know, the way that he got sort of dragged through the mud after the disappointing showing in the in-season tournament game against the Lakers, and it became a referendum on his fitness and his health and all those sorts of things. He has played more. He played 65 games for the first time in his career. He has gotten better and looked at leaner and more explosive as the season has gone on. Assist rates up. The efficiency has been really good. I think the last like 15 games or so, up over 25, 26 points a game, 6-20 true shooting. Again, assist rates up. He's looking like the all-NBA game breaker that we've seen. There's that huge game against the Suns where he's on the floor with Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and he looks like the best guy on the floor against those guys in a game they needed. This is it. If you would like, I mean, think about, you have to cast our mind back because it's been so long. All of the hype that attended Zion Williamson, this is a transformational prospect, generational talent, all that kind of stuff coming out of Duke, coming into New Orleans with the number one overall pick. And we have yet to see him in a playoff series. If he can perform at that level, all the stuff that I mentioned about Banchero earlier, where it's like you find out how teams defend you and then what you have as counters, how you deal with it. This Pelicans team is deep. There's interesting pieces on it. It never seems to come together at the same time. Brandon Ingram being hurt is a problem for that. The perpetual sort of will they, won't they usage of Jonas Valanciunas is an issue, all that kind of stuff. But this is the time to find out what Zion looks like in this context. And if even a loss, if they come in as an underdog against, they're in the 3-6 and they're dealing with Oklahoma City, who's been fantastic on both ends of the floor since Jump Street, MVP candidates, and they two clutch closers with SGA and Jalen Williams. If they lose that series, I don't think that's necessarily any skin off their nose. And maybe, so the issue is like, if you can perform in that series, like say Luka did in the series where they lost to the Clippers, and you're a monster and everyone sees it, but you're outgunned. That elevates Zion reputationally, I think, in a way that he's got to show it. He's got to be in those games. He's got to perform at that level. I think he's capable of it. And I think we've seen that over the course of the season. I've been in the tank for this Pelicans team in a way that's going to break my heart. And I know it, but this is it. Like, you're here, you're on the doorstep. You know, let's see it, Zion.
Yeah, and it reminds me, like, a couple years ago when they played against the Suns in the first round, that was an awesome series, and they didn't have Zion.
Yeah, he was watching his street clothes.
And it feels like, you know, if they have the same ceiling this year as they did without him, it'll raise questions about that idea of Zion Williamson as being the alpha on this team. Like, is he the number one that you can bank around? But then you got the Brandon Ingram injury here that is kind of, again, another question mark of another variable that will give, I think, those who are in Zion's corner a little bit of an out that is like, you know what? If Brandon Ingram's healthy, this is a different team. So I almost feel like they need to put him in bubble wrap Zion for the next like three games, because we can't not have Zion playoff Zion. Like, we need playoff Zion.
Yeah, we need it.
We need it in the worst way. And you can tell that Zion wants that. Like, he wants that stage. And so I'm rooting for that. Two guys I'm going to throw at you. Two of the best players in the league that have never won a championship, who have tons of accolades, but not the championship ring: James Harden and Rudy Gobert. I'm not saying Rudy Gobert is the same level in the pantheon of NBA players as James Harden, but he's got four Defensive Player of the Year awards, and the questions continue to, you know, circle around him, the vultures about his legacy, about like, great defensive player in the regular season, but liability in the postseason. And that's unfair in most cases. But you do see this Minnesota Timberwolves team in the same way that the Boston Celtics, where we build you up to tear you down.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Timberwolves could nail that number one seed. And then the expectations are, you know, in the PFLANS thing, it's like, it's way more fun when Ant Edwards and Naz Reid are, you know, on the ascent rather than arrived, because then the expectations for Rudy Gobert and Karl-Anthony Towns, and that injury is so awkward because of how well they played without him, with Naz Reid's ascension. It's going to be really tough if, like, they decide, hey, you know what, Rudy, we need Kat and Naz Reid out there. We've got to get more scoring out there. And they're not able to attack mismatches or switches, or when teams go small. That's the thing, is you're going to hear those Rudy Gobert questions too. And then on the other side, James Harden, we don't have to spend too much time on that, but like, the Clippers and their move to Ballmer Dome, like, it feels like there's a lot at stake with just about everyone on that Clippers team. And James Harden and the, you know, how many times has he forced a trade out of his situation? It seems like the Heat isn't really, not Miami Heat, but like, the Heat is turned down on that whole storyline. But man, feels like that is a big part of this too.
Absolutely. I mean, if nothing else, because it brings back one of the greatest quotes. I mean, one of the greatest quotes of all time, non-toilet hands division, is just KG being like, you ain't got no infinite wiggles. Like, at a certain point, James Harden's going to be out of wiggles, and this might be it. So if you, you know, flame out again in the playoffs, you know, what... The bag that's waiting for you, it seems like the only place that it's waiting is in LA. And then if that becomes untenable, yeah, you know, where do you go from there? Another one on that list, Paul George, just like, go quickly with it. He has the opportunity to be the belle of the ball in unrestricted free agency. He can opt out of the final year of his deal. He's the old, like, Kawhi extended. And then he was like, I think everybody's going to be back. And Paul George is kind of like, yeah, I don't know, we'll see about that. Kawhi took less than the max. Does PG not want to do that? How he performs in the postseason, does that impact, say, hypothetically, I don't know, Daryl Morey's willingness to throw the entire full four-year bag at him? TBD, remains to be seen. And Gobert, one note on that I just wanted to highlight, because it was coming off of the Wednesday game against the Nuggets, where they're in it right up until the last like 6 minutes or so, and then Denver absolutely hits the afterburners, scores on like 10 straight trips, and that's the game. The Nuggets were basically doing their postseason rotation in terms of your backup center is Aaron Gordon. So they're playing small against huge Rudy Gobert, right? Beginning of the second quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter. And they're switching everything, which is the way that Denver likes to play in this postseason context. And so after the games, quote, courtesy of our friend Dane Moore with Blue Wire Podcast, Rudy Gobert saying that the Wolves need to be better at beating switches when an opponent plays small against them. Quote, I think we didn't take advantage of the small lineup. They were switching everything. They were switching small guys on me and Nas, and we took tough shots. I think we have some work to do as a team. We have to prepare for that. Not for nothing. We heard an awful lot of that the entire time that he was in Utah. And every time the ball got down to him, it didn't, like, they didn't regularly beat it. So maybe that's a ecosystem thing. Maybe that's a, can we deliver you the ball in the right place thing? It's just, that perked my ears up a little bit because I'm like, uh-oh, we've heard this exact same thing before heading into postseason series where teams want to play small against you. And the antidote to that is you need to mash them. And if you're like at game 80 and you don't have that in the bag yet, that might be something to keep an eye on as they head into this postseason. But you're absolutely, I mean, great, great choices, plenty on the line, plenty to keep an eye on as we head into the postseason because guys, that's about all we got for you today. I think that was plenty. I mean, frankly, just the Mark Aguirre section alone was enough, let alone everything else that we've given to you. Tom, before we get out the door, anything that you'd like to plug on your way out?
Yeah, check out that big number on OG Anunoby, and that will be weekly at Yahoo Sports coming out on Thursdays. So we've got three, I think, in the vault right now. So we got OG and we have Jason Tatum. And then last week we had another one. So we've got three in the vault. So go check them all out. They will be on social media. I will be tweeting them out, but also on yahoosports.com on the NBA section. You will get the big number videos. And I'm, believe it or not, I will be writing for Yahoo Sports as well. I am working on a piece right now that I'm very excited about. And so just keep an eye out that you will be seeing me and this mug and hopefully more references to toilet hands in the future at Yahoo.
Incredible. I cannot wait. I'm thrilled about it. I mean, you know this, and we've talked about it before. I'm a gigantic fan of your work and have been for forever and a fan of you. So being able to share a roof with you a little bit is a true treat for me.
It's my pleasure. I will just say it is. The pleasure is all mine. Dan, you are the man. And I think when I find out that I'm going to be potting with you, I get really excited because I can bring up toilet hands and knowing my audience will enjoy this because you just have that way about you, Dan, that flicker in the eye that makes me excited to talk about NBA in a time where the NBA, you know, can beat you down and spit you out and the hours are long that we do sit here and laugh about toilet hands or elephant drawers,
laundry bag. Oh man, I feel like I'm going to go back as soon as we're done with this. I'm going to go back and re-listen to the audio just to dive deep into those names again. But in order to do that, we got to get out of here. So that's all we got for you today, everybody. Thanks so much to super producer John Gennaro for all of the things that he does to make the show look and sound great. Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you are currently listening. And please leave us a 5-star review. Share the show. Helps us with discoverability. Every little bit helps. Thanks so much for listening. And we would appreciate it if you would come back again next week for another episode of No Cap Room.